Good evening again. Welcome to Finance and Governance Committee. My name is Zach Edon. I'm the chair of the committee. I got my two colleagues, Councilmember Kathy Hogarty and Councilmember Cynthia Delstrinas Johnson. We have three items today. The first one is phase two of the prioritization of the American Rescue Plan Act for the ARPA funds. It says here, Director Collison will be talking about this.
Yes, thank you. So Vicki Carlson, Finance Director. Back in September, the last time you saw this info memo, it was ready to move on to the full council for discussion. There have been a couple of updates to the memo, and so I wanted to bring it back to this committee for full discussion before it goes to the council. That way you have an opportunity to be familiar with the changes in the memo and what the requests are and have a chance to discuss them amongst yourself before it moves to the full council. So I'd like to direct you to page 7 of the info memo. That's where the new information starts. There's been a lot of discussion about adding in the equity piece. There was a lot of thought on equity into all of these different projects that have been proposed for our use of ARPA funds, but we went ahead and added that in. So starting on page 7, we've gone through most of the projects and shown how we use that equity lens to determine how ARPA funds would benefit for these particular projects and how that goes with the equity lens piece. A couple of other changes that we have pointed out that I want to point out is we've added two requests for use of ARPA funds. And there's going to be a third one tonight that I was just made aware of tonight. So I'll talk about that in a minute. But the two new additions is one of them is for to cover fire minimum staffing overtime. As you recall, when the pandemic hit back in 2020, one of the changes was to reduce minimum staffing for fire from 13 down to 12. It was a direct relation to COVID, and that was how fire department participated in the budget reductions for their department. Back this last April, we had an increase back from 12 to 13 for minimum staffing. And we estimate for 2021, that's going to be about $225,000 and about $300,000 next year. It definitely would tie into ARPA use because there's definitely that COVID link. And so we wanted to add that to staff proposal for use of ARPA funds to cover just that minimum staffing piece. I'm also making a request for an ARPA financial analyst. The more we get into the details of the reporting requirements, not only at the federal level, but the state letter with the state, at the state auditor's level, it is an incredibly cumbersome process to do all of this documentation because it is not just simply a matter of tracking the transactions, but it's to provide that link back to COVID. It is incredibly time consuming. And so we are making a request for a financial analyst that's specific to ARPA tracking that would last only as long as the expenditures and the reporting requirements, so probably 3 years at most for this. So we've added that. The other request, and Rachel Bianchi, Deputy City Administrator, is here to talk about that, is it does appear that there's an opportunity to restore the C-Click-Fix program at the pricing that we had when we reduced the service due to pandemic, and it's about $13,000. And so we're going to be adding that request to restore the C-Click-Fix program for 2022. And Ms. Bianchi is here to give you some additional information on that.
Thank you, Vicki. For the record, Rachel Bianchi, Deputy City Administrator. So this is a follow-up that I know two of you will know about, right, from CSS, Councilmember Hogarty at CSS last week. We presented the internal sort of workaround that Ryan, who was an intern for the city of Tukwila, actually created for us. And I just want to underscore Ryan here because I do believe Ryan is the reason that C-Click-Fix came back and agreed to grandfather us in at the former price because of the great work that Ryan did, right, put us in a great position. So I know I told you last week I didn't think that we'd be able to move this quickly, but one of the reasons we thought we'd walk this on tonight is because it was clear that it was a priority of yours, at least from the CSS committee. C-Click-Fix has agreed to come back and grandfather us back in, so the annual cost would be just under $13,000, and that does include the tie-in to Lucity that they're giving us It's a $5,000 integration, but they're giving that to us for free under that $13,000. So this is late breaking news, literally just came this afternoon. So if that's something that you all are interested in, we would go ahead and add that in, but wanted to kind of get the feel of the committee here. Councilmember Hogarty, I know since the other two were in CSS, you're a little out of the loop, but basically the request at CSS was because the new version of Tukwila Works is form-based and doesn't have the same opportunities that the C-Click Fix technology has in terms of, you know, the ease of an app on your iPhone or your Android, right? The ability to track anonymous issues, things like that. There was a request from CSS that we go back and see what it would take to bring it back on. So we thought it would be considerably more, but again, I just can't give enough shout outs to Ryan for his work. His work is really what made C-Click Fix come back to us and say, okay, we'll go ahead and grandfather you back in. So happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you both. Comments, questions, Kathy?
Yes. So looking on page 9, our total amount that we have is, I'm looking on 6 and 9. One says, I'm just looking, I don't understand the numbers, or so we've added some stuff in.
So we did make some changes to the initial request. For full transparency, I wanted to show you what was initially requested, or the initial proposal by staff, which is on page 6. As new information became available, as we fine-tuned what we were going to be requesting, the final recommendation to this committee and the full council is the chart on page 9, which does include the addition of adding minimum staffing for fire and also the analyst to track all of this. And then what we're looking for is council direction on what we can include in the budget amendment that will be coming to you in the next meeting. So again, this is staff's recommendation. I'm expecting that you all have the conversation at the full council tonight, and you may end up adjusting this list as it's currently presented. And however this list is amended, that's what you'll see coming forward in the budget amendment. And there may be some additional fine tuning as we continue to work with staff. Just as one example, in here for the business assistance, we thought we would spend $10,000 in 2021, $190,000 in 2022. It looks like the total will still be $200,000, but there might be an adjustment between the 2 years. So again, the final staff proposal at this point is on page 9. It's just an update from what was on page 6.
So on page 6, it shows 4 years and page 9. So I'm having a hard time figuring out where everything ended up.
Correct. So on page 6, what we wanted to give you is a plan that will show that we will be able to spend the full $5.7 million. What we're looking for really tonight and the next couple of weeks is just simply council authority for 21 and 22. The full years 21 through 24, again, was just a way to show you how we can spend all of these funds. But right now, we're not looking for formal approval for 23 and 24. That conversation can happen during the budget process that will be kicking off, honestly, in just a couple of months. So you'll have plenty of time to discuss those out years and make adjustments to that plan if that's your desire.
So, for example, let's go to street staff. So on page 6, it has 162, and then the numbers are different. 2022 is 335, and in the page 6 one, it's 171. What does that
Correct.
Mean?
Correct. We were able to fine tune that information. When the initial memo was presented to you, I can't remember the exact date, but back on page 6, when it was initially $162,000 in 2021, that actually was only for a half a year, because when committee gave direction to go back and hire that staff, it was for half the year. As we fine tuned this memo and we had further discussions with staff, we recognize that moving into 2022, we need to provide funding for the full year, not a half a year. And so we went back and did the calculation to double that so it would cover the entire year's worth of staffing, not just a half a year plus a COLA adjustment.
I think I want to go through all of these because I mean, that's, these are changes that, is that okay with the rest of the committee? Because we, it's just, it's like, and then we have numbers in 2022 where on page 6, there's no numbers in 2022 at all. And now they're all filled up for 20, they're all populated. So what's happening there?
If you'd like to go through each one, I'm happy to do that.
Quickly.
Sure. So the streets, again, that was half a year in 2021. With further discussion with staff, we needed to add funding for the full year, not just a half a year. Same thing for parks and rec staff. It was $50,000 in 2021. That was actually for parks. $100,000 in 2022. I'm flipping. I don't have this printed out, so I have to scroll back and forth between the two charts. Business assistance changed. The initial request was $200,000. We realized we could not spend it all this year. When the memo was published, we thought it would be $10,000 this year, $190,000 next year. Fine-tuning that discussion with Derek Speck, our economic manager, it's going to be about $115,000 this year and $185,000 next year, so shifting between the 2 years. Same with utility and rental assistance. We'd initially plugged in $500,000 this year, but just working with our human services staff, it's become very apparent that while we're assisting as many households as possible this year, we're not going to be spending all of those funds this year. So what isn't spent this year will be shifted into 2022. Let's see, where else do we have changes? The upgrade for a council chambers, I think that was a bit of a change. We initially thought that would be $200,000, and it looks like it's going to be $10,000 this year and $208,000 next year. So it's just updated information working with our TIS department. And I want to clarify that upgrading the council chambers isn't just the council chambers. It's also updating our conference rooms. So when committees meet, we can do that same hybrid approach. So what's being done now, I believe, is the committee meeting rooms, and then the full council complete update is scheduled for next year. What other changes are there?
Well, I have a question. So you've added on the cost of fire minimum staffing, community connectors, and financial analyst. So where'd you take the money away from to add these? Because I have go ahead.
Yeah, so those were additions. They were not, we didn't take from any other programs. We just added that because, again, we have $5.7 million in total to spend. So as we came up with refining this program, they were added to the list.
All right. Thank you. Those are my questions.
And I do want to point out one other change that was on the traffic calming. So again, in speaking with our public work staff, we initially had plugged in $400,000 this year, $400,000 next year. Obviously, this is already October, so there's no way that even if council approves going back to the full $400,000 that we could spend that much in 2021. So we were able to reduce that particular request down to $100,000, and that may even be too high. As we get further into this budget amendment process, we will continue to fine-tune these numbers.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Dr. Carlson, for that explanation. Councilmember Delacinos Johnson, comments, questions?
Yeah, thank you for taking time to sort of explain. It is a little confusing because it's just so different than what we've been working on. But I think I do understand, and I think I understand Kathy's question too, just because before we had a chart that said 2021, 22, 23, 24, and it like gave out the totals. And now we're just wondering, well, if we're only given these 2 years, what does the 4 year look like, and are we taking money away from 23 and 24 to like give to some of these new things that we're seeing here, and how does that all map out. So in the future, it might be helpful to include all 4 years because that's what we've been looking at. So we can kind of see where things are getting allocated over the 4 years because we have 4 years to spend the total pot of 5.87. So I'm following what Kathy is saying and the confusion and just seeing the 2 years. That wasn't a question. That was just a statement for later when it comes back to us because we're not making the decision today. We're just taking the steps to clarify for the future. I had questions about the Darktrace cybersecurity because that's the new one that I didn't see before. So if someone could explain what that is.
Sure, I'll jump in. This is a security software that was cut during the budget cuts. It was a discussion that you all had back during the streamlined sales tax mitigation discussion. And so there was discussion about using those funds to pay for that. Because there is a direct COVID nexus, staff is suggesting that the ARPA funds pay for that. It simply just frees up other money that then could be spent in other ways that don't have the similar restrictions that the ARPA funds have. So council's already, you know, said that that was something that was important, but you're right. We had it in a different bucket, but we just think this, again, we're always trying to free up money that doesn't have restrictions on it so that you have the ability to fund more things.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying. It might be good to, I don't know, to put in the future the final memo when we approve this all because it's just hard to remember like everything we had discussed before. I'm comfortable with the ARPA financial analyst. I understand that this is a cumbersome or difficult process and we need the extra staff to be able to track the funds. So I'm okay with that. And I think, I mean, that's all the questions that I have about this updated memo.
All right. Thank you, Cynthia. I also have the similar questions Kathy was asking, and I might just go back and ask you one. So I am comfortable with the request, the walk-in request, because I think that's one of the things we talked about, and I asked Ms. Bianchi if she can come back with a budget. So I'm glad to see that there's something that you're able to come back, so totally support that. Also for my council, you know, my colleagues, council members, this is going tonight. Cal meeting. So we will have a very extensive discussions, and then I think it's upon us to guide. I'll do the best I can to guide the rest of the council between a couple of things that we talked about. So the way this memo was constructed, my understanding is that there is a total of 3 phases, and the first phase was the streamlined taxes mitigation, which captured, if you look at, you know, page 9, it has an asterisk in front of them. Am I correct on that?
We had, so phase 1 was initially going to be the sales tax, streamlined sales tax mitigation payments, which were received back by the city. That was something that the state legislature had reduced because of their own impact for COVID. And so some of these items that had been asterisk, we had initially were going to put against the streamlined sales tax mitigation payments. This was before the federal government had come out with additional guidance saying that you had to use ARPA funds. There had to be that COVID link. And so looking, as Ms. Bianchi had reported earlier, is we wanted to put the cost that there's a direct nexus to COVID against the ARPA funds, which then frees up the sales tax mitigation to do things that don't have to have that nexus. It's a much less restrictive revenue source. And so really it's just changing, it's the same concept, it's just changing which piece of money is going to be paying for that. And right. If I could go ahead and respond to Ms. Delazarino-Johnson's comments about why we've included 4 years earlier and only 2 years later in this final iteration and not provided the full amount is for two reasons. Number one, council can only give formal authority for 21 and 22 because that's the budget that's in front of you. And I didn't want to make any assumptions in the out year. I wanted it to be very clear that council, you still have an opportunity to continue discussing how these ARPA funds will be used in future years. And I guess just from my perspective, I was hesitant to put the full 4 years out there and have the misconception that now it's locked in stone. We truly just need direction from you for 21 and 22. And then you'll have ample time to discuss how to spend the rest of the funds in the out years. And 2022 could also be adjusted as new information comes forward to you. The other thing I do want to mention is we do expect at some point that we will be coming out of this pandemic and our revenues will start to return to something that resembles more normal. We're already starting to see that with sales tax. You're going to see in the budget amendment that comes forward that we have had an increase in sales tax, which is great news. Not all revenue sources have rebounded, but some definitely are showing signs of rebounding and returning to pre-pandemic levels. And so the idea is this ARPA funding is just going to be a bridge. And as the ARPA funds then run out, it'll be able to be replaced by ongoing revenue sources such as sales tax, gambling tax, admission tax, et cetera. So the idea is that the ARPA funds are strictly a bridge.
Thank you. Kathy, I saw you got your hand on, and then I can finish my comments and questions after you go. So no, go ahead. I'll yield to you.
Okay. I was going to do some math. How much money is left for 23-24? I see the total number on page 6, but I don't think that's all of the funds. Isn't it closer to 5.8?
Yeah, it's 5.8. So it's about $1.8 million left.
And so then just based on what you were saying about this being bridge money, then that's, you know, or filler money, however you want to describe it as being something to help out through this time, then I'm thinking that 1.8 might be appropriate then, because in the out years, because it's really hopefully these next 2 years are the critical years, and then we'll be out of the pandemic, we all hope. Thank you.
We certainly hope, and we do want to still want to maintain conservatism when it comes to our budget and our projections, because there are still a lot of unknowns out there. We still don't know when we're going to be out of this permanently, and so we're taking this one step at a time. If we start to see things start to go negative, you know, we will definitely alert the committee and council that we need to take additional steps to make other changes. But right now, we are starting to see either revenues holding the line or starting to increase, which is what we need to see. We just need to see more of it in other revenue sources.
Is that all, Kathy? Yeah, okay. I think one of the things I was going to point out between the two charts, and I think it is kind of making sense to me, is like when you look at, you know, for example, if you look at traffic calming, I think it equates on the previous 1.6. If you look at the page 9 now, you know, that's about 900,000. Those are the kind of things that I was kind of curious on. Did it shift somewhere? And I believe you said that nothing was taken away from something, but it probably got pushed on the outer years is what's missing now. Is that
correct?
All right. The one thing that I talked about on my other committee is that Parks, the director of Parks came to talk to us and update on the turf field, and I asked if that could be looked into, if the ARPA funds could pay for it, and she had a number. And I don't know if that kind of got circled back to make it back to this memo, and that's one of the things that I requested in that meeting. Do you know anything about that?
I had initial conversations with our director of parks and recreation actually a few months ago, because I believe that came up with early in these conversations. Based on our current knowledge of how you can use ARPA funds, I'm not 100% sure that it would qualify for ARPA funds. I need to get a better understanding of exactly what that project would entail to be able to fully answer that question.
Okay.
And the reason I say that, just to give a little further explanation, is it wasn't a project that we had already approved that we reduced. It's a new project. So the nexus is not there from, you know, restoring services or restoring projects that were reduced. But there is language from the federal government that talks about programs that would benefit those most directly affected by the pandemic. And there's a lot of language in there about outdoor spaces. So that's where I need to better understand that project to see if it really meets that definition or if it would be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, thank you for looking for that nexus. I based on my limited view of, and then similar projects that I think one project we approved here, especially I'm thinking about the tennis court. It didn't probably, I don't know what funds that were used to do that work. And also when we talk about our parks and who used them, especially, making sure that, you know, that there is a space for folks that, are very vulnerable in our community. So I'm just trying to get, if we're going to talk about it tonight and you haven't done that assessment, how long would it take you to do that? And then, you know, you could give an answer to, adequate answer that it meets or it does not meet in ARPA funds.
I could probably have an answer for you by the next Finance and Governance Committee meeting. That would give me an opportunity to understand the project from our Parks and Recreation Director and then do the research with the federal guidance that they've given to see if it would qualify or not.
And in that meeting, just sharing for your information. And I think that the director mentioned that their plan is to get a grant from the state. And then my thought was, yeah, that's great. If we don't get the grant, I think we should be able to fund. So I think I'm very supportive of the department, you know, pursuing that route. That's one of the routes, and just letting you know, I think, you know, if we can get the grant for that program, that would be really great. If we can't, then we should definitely figure out a way to fund it, and we should fund it from the ARPA funds. I intend to bring this up later on, and we can have a discussion on it. The other thing I really appreciate you and the staff that worked on this memo that provided very succinct when it, you know, the question that the council member Delshina Johnson asked about the equity. So I really appreciate that. And one of the examples was used having a virtual meeting and how that's, you know, be very helpful for folks that can't come to the meeting. So I'm very appreciative of that language specifically. That is end of my comments. Are there any more comments on this? Go ahead, Council Member Delsinus Johnson.
I'm supportive of what you were talking about in terms of figuring out whether the soccer, I think Tracy was talking about like those mini soccer fields as a smaller option, because to do a big soccer field would take a lot of time, but they were looking at smaller options. I'd be supportive of looking at whether ARPA funds could go towards that. I know in our previous conversations, you know, I'd shared that I'd learned at a training or seminar that was put together by the National League of Cities that there was like a provision in the ARPA funds to what Vicki was talking about in terms of underserved communities and the types of project, just giving a little more leeway to using funds in ways that serve communities like ours. And so I'm hopeful that maybe we could find something there. I was also going to mention just, you know, we are going into the bigger meeting with the bigger group, and I think it's good for us to have these discussions here. We never had a follow-up discussion about SCORE and how we felt about that request. And I just want to share that I'm leaning more towards not in favor of approving the extra funding that they're asking for. And the reason being is just that I want to see them come to us with alternative solutions to incarceration. I know that that's something that's possible, that they were already talking about, they're having discussions about it. But if we as a, you know, a partner city came in and said, you know, we want to see these types of solutions, because I just know, and, you know, in not in honor of, but in awareness of mental health awareness day or month, which was this past week, I think it was mental health awareness day. There are not a lot of services like that in our community. And I would love to see more services that are offered to people with behavioral health issues that don't require them to be incarcerated. And I just know the impacts of even just one stay in overnight in jail could have on someone losing their job, losing their kids, losing their housing. And I don't think that I'm going to support that request. And so I just wanted to let you both know how I felt about that.
Yeah.
So you're not surprised.
Thank you, Councilman Johnson. I think one of the things we agreed on, especially this subject, was that we weren't going to recommend anything. There are a lot, some other things I don't agree, so I didn't want, but I, you know, thank you for sharing that. So we'll just have a discussion with the full council, and then we could really, you know, go into detail in each on which ones. And then our cool council president then can move us forward on a direction. Okay, are there any other questions, Kathy? You good? Okay, so we will be talking about this forward in tonight's CAL meeting. All right, so next one, I think this is you, Director Carlson. 2021 second quarter investment report.
It is. Thank you very much. So again, this is the second quarter cash and investment report. We try and report on this on a quarterly basis. So as at the end of June, our total portfolio was $74.9 million. The bulk of it was cash and cash equivalents, so basically short-term investments, $71.4 million. $3.5 million longer-term investments. We had stopped looking for longer-term investments last year at the height of the pandemic and how it was affecting the city finances. We wanted to make sure that we maintained liquidity, not knowing what the future was going to hold. Things are starting to settle down a little bit, so we are starting to reach out and try and purchase some longer-term investments so we can increase our yield. So you'll start to see some more investments come through, trickling in, wanting to make sure that we're still maintaining liquidity, but that we're also trying to capitalize on the yields that are out there, kind of in the 3 to 5 year range. So more to come on that later. But just the investment activity through June, interest rates on the top of page 2 of the memo totaled $73,000. Our longer term investments held by the city, we do expect another $46,000 in interest coming in the rest of the year. We do have one bond scheduled to mature that's $500,000. We have purchased two investments, again, looking at that 3 to 5 year mark, trying to increase on our investments. One of them we do expect to be called just because of the yield rate. The other one is non-callable for 5 years, so 0.9% and 0.83% respectively on those two maturities, or those two bonds. Still really, really low, but definitely beating the LGIP rate, which is what we currently get right now. Total current overall portfolio yield through the end of the year, or through June, was 0.17, look at that really big number. Washington State LGIP was 0.075% earning, and our money market was 0.17%. It's painful to talk about those low rates. Looking forward into the future, the federal government has spoken that they might start increasing rates next year, probably halfway through the year, but they're still watching inflation. So at this point, I am not going to hold out that the federal government will actually increase rates next year as they're projecting, but we'll see how that goes on. As of the end of June, we were in full compliance with our policy. And I do want to mention that we have been updating the investment policy, so you will be seeing that the first part of November with a few updates to that policy that we'll be asking for approval for. And with that, there's not a whole lot to report because we don't have a lot of longer-term investments right now.
Thank you, Director Carlson. Questions, comments? Councilmember Hogarty?
No questions. Thank you for this report.
Councilmember Delsinos-Johnson?
No questions for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Same here. Thank you, Director Carlson. Appreciate it. So the next one is item C, a staffing request from Human Services Department. Juan Badia, Director of Human Resources.
Good afternoon, everybody. The Human Resources Department, in collaboration with the Police Department, are trying to add an FTE in Human Resources. In the last year, we've probably recruited almost 100 people, if not more. Maintained all of our requirements, bargaining requirements, and everything. And we've really, since we've had a little bit of turnover in the last year, Erica got a promotion, and so did Michelle, got a promotion over there with the King County Library System, and then Erica went over to Renton. And so we've been able to maintain all of this with really about three people on staff for, about the last year off and on. We just hired our fourth person, our last authorized FTE, a couple of weeks ago, and he's making an immediate impact. However, with projected hirings, unfreezing of positions, especially in PD, talking to Chief Griever, he had volunteered that if one of his positions could get funded again, to transfer the position, the funding, leaving that position frozen, and transfer the funding over to HR. There is a little bit of an impact, on the funding. It's a little more for an HR person than your average entry-level police officer. But what we're asking for is that our recommendation get added to the budget amendments that will be going to council later on this month, I believe.
Thank you, Juan Gavilla, Director of Human Resources. The Council Member Hogarty, do you have questions, comments for the director?
Yes, so a human resource analyst, where does that fit in your department? Can you tell us a little about the structure of your department?
Yes. We revamped our org structure to allow growth, internal growth, but also to allow opportunity for folks. So we have an entry-level position, which is our human resources technician, which is the position that Jessica is in currently. And then we created a medium position, a little more than entry, but not necessarily a full analyst, and an HR associate position, which is can do a little more stuff. I mean, now Jessica's not necessarily entry-level. I mean, she manages the performance review process, make sure everybody has their performance review. She manages the onboarding process. I mean, she's a complete rock star. But there's some skills, that require a little bit more either experience or education, and that's where the associate comes in, the HR associate, which is currently Jessica's filling in, as an acting position of the HR associate, works with more of the recruiting and the protected leaves, doesn't necessarily manage a full caseload of recruitments or protected leave, but helps the process along. The associate would help schedule interviews, schedule background backgrounding, help either the civil service analyst or the recruiter with like I said, backgrounding, reference checks, onboarding, getting everything in the interviews, which we've been doing. It just seems like my staff is doing a bunch of interviews lately. And then we have an HR analyst, which is your bread and butter generalist that can take a recruitment from start to finish, can take a protected leave from start to finish, dabbles a bit in the ADA, with protected leaves and accommodations. And then we have a senior analyst where Travis is. Travis, as a senior analyst, works more with labor relations, more of the complex FMLA, ADA cases, and also works with the self-funded healthcare plan. So, and then me. I just drink coffee and direct all day. That's it. So, that's kind of where we currently are. We used to just have two analysts, an HR director and a tech. So we realized that, some of the higher elevated duties that Michelle and Erica were doing, and appropriately classified them, it was a non-financial reclassification. It was more of the duties. They were already getting paid at the senior analyst level, their duties matched. And so we looked and revamped our org structure and our classifications to match industry standards.
Okay, so you have four people in the department. Are you
Yes, we currently have, we have five with myself now. Four. With myself, we have Jessica, Travis, Allen, and myself. Allen is an analyst, Travis is a senior analyst, and Jessica is technically holding the FTE for the HR tech, but is acting as an HR associate.
So you're looking at getting a second analyst. You've got one, you're going to get a second one.
An analyst or an associate. Okay. Yeah, we're still, we're obviously brainstorming, what is the best position. The best place to put this person. One of the things is we also want to make sure that the civil service analyst, will have some dedicated time to focus on public safety, especially the police department entry-level testing. As we all know, the future is going to be a little tough to recruit and retain, and we want to make sure that we have a person that is not just dedicated to the police department, but has availability to help the PIO. Vic does a great job of recruiting for the police, but also helping make sure that we can test, and get folks through the civil service process and get them on the list and get them hired as soon as possible without any delays.
Thank you, Juan.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you, Councilman Hogarty. Councilman Delacena Thompson?
Yeah. I'm supportive of this request. I see the chief and deputy chief are on the line, and I was wondering if they just had comments because, we're just about the recruitment issues, and you're giving a position to HR, and so just trying to understand your perspective in this.
Yeah, I'd be glad to comment. So Eric Griever, Chief of Police, Tacoma Police Department, for the record. Just for clarification on the financial impact, it indicates the police department would keep one patrol position frozen indefinitely. The intent is to freeze it and keep it frozen for us, the position's still there within our org chart, until we had the ability to fill it. The intent was to use the funds in the immediate to fill the need to make it so we could backfill all these position should we the city find the revenue to unfreeze them. So we don't anticipate that need here for the rest of this year or for 2022. Because of recruitment and retention issues, it will be extremely difficult for it. We've got seven frozen commission positions. We currently have three open, unfilled positions that we have authority to hire into. So that's 10 positions. So it will be very difficult with retention, people leaving, and the attrition that we have of backfilling that last frozen position. And we feel that those funds could be better used, already seeing the impact prior to COVID on HR. We thought that those police funds, if that position is unfrozen, and the funds were then applied for that unfrozen position to HR of being able to help us with our recruitment and the need. Absent COVID, HR has been extremely understaffed, and the police department is a great burden on them because of the amount of recruitment we do and the way that it happens with our civil service and the whole processing. So we felt that the police department funds, if we could unfreeze that position, would be best used in helping HR meet all of the city's needs. However, the police department does have a great, provide that burden to them. And we know, because I'm talking with Travis and Jessica and Juan almost on a daily basis, that's how much of a need there is for the police department. So we'd be glad to be able to help out in that way.
Thank you.
Cool. I am very supportive of this. I think it's a good cross working between the police department and HR, recognizing there's a need. And so I'm very supportive. So this is a council, a committee decision for them to go ahead. And I think the difference is about 16 or something like that. I'll let the staff figure out where that comes from. But it looks like to me that I see Ms. Bianchi's hand. Ms. Bianchi, you want to make a comment? Or
thank you. I just want to clarify that with the committee's permission, we would put this in the budget amendments, and that would go forward for the full council to agree during the budget amendment process. Thank you.
So thank you for that clarification. I'm very supportive. If you guys are all supportive, I think that will just reflect on the minutes, and then we can have the other council members will have a view at the during the amendments.
Thank you.
So I saw three head nods that were very supportive, all of us. Are there any miscellaneous items? None? Okay, cool. All right, we are adjourned. See you guys at 7. Thank you.